Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Our next guest is somebody I've been looking forward to having on the show for months now. I've been following the trajectory of the building and the writing and the publishing of this book called Three Ring Circus, about the Shaq and Kobe Lakers from 96 through 04. Their build-up to that three-in-a-row championship dynasty to their inevitable breakup. And the author of it has done so many other great books. He's one of the most prolific sports writers that we have today. Last time we had him on was for the USFL book, Football for a Buck, which was just a fascinating and fantastic read. He's done books about the Mets, the 86 Mets, The Bad Guys Won, Sweetness about Walter Payton, Brett Favre, and so many other fantastic and interesting, insightful looks inside our sports history. And this one just proves to be unbelievable as well. Joining us here on the show is Jeff Pearlman. Jeff, good morning. How you doing, bud?
That was a great introduction. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You got it. You got it. My pleasure to have you here on the show. And reading through this book, it made me wonder. There are so many anecdotes in there about how difficult it was to play with Kobe, to manage Kobe, to coach Kobe. And you are writing this while he passes away tragically and all these wonderful things are being said about Kobe. Was it awkward for you to be writing about some of his darker moments as you heard everybody talk about all of his wonderful accomplishments?
All right. So basically, the book, I finished the book before he died. So the book was wrapped before January, and it was going through editing. And when I found out he died, so I live in Southern California, but I'm from New York. And when I found out he died, it's going to sound dumb, right? But I don't think I realized the complete depth of love for him out there, out here in a iconic way. You know, like I grew up in New York with Patrick Ewing, just as an example. And New Yorkers loved Patrick Ewing. He was great. But it wasn't like that. And you come out here and you realize the intensity, and it was all about the appreciation for the work ethic and the doggedness. And Kobe taught me this and Kobe taught me that. And I learned by watching him that you can have a dream. And it blew me away. And so it didn't affect me when I was writing it because the book was done, but it affected me when I thought about doing stuff like this, to be honest, and promoting it, because the period I'm writing about, 96 to 04, was kind of a mixed bag for him. And he was young and he was immature and he could be difficult. And it was also Eagle, Colorado, and everything that happened there. So it's more this almost need to remind people that the Kobe in this book is a sliver in time in the course of development, and not the guy who died at 41 as the dad of four as a youth basketball coach. And it's a really, really weird line to walk, to be honest with you. It is not the most comfortable line to walk.
Yeah, I could understand that, because there are anecdotes in this about just how difficult Kobe was and how he was not beloved by everybody. And the book opens up with this amazing anecdote about Samaki Walker, where essentially, you know, Samaki owed him money and he didn't pay him, and Kobe eventually punched him in the eye. And this was a no-no, and basically the team bus said, okay, Samaki, you want to fight Kobe? We're going to pull off on the side of the road, and you guys go ahead and do it. And this is the entire Laker bus saying, including Shaq, yep, Kobe deserves to get his ass kicked right now. And even Phil says that. Now, this is not the Kobe that we're talking about in passing, but it sheds a little bit of light on how uncomfortable sometimes the relationship was between Kobe and his teammates, right?
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting. So Samaki told me that story, and Samaki Walker's a great guy, like a great guy. And he almost was telling it more as an example of sort of the awkwardness and the discomfort of Kobe. And it's really the story of a kid who grew up in Italy, you know, one of probably three black faces he ever saw in his youth, then moves to suburbia, again, sort of a fish out of water, never really sort of developing this social awareness that, you know, he actually really struggled with. And the thing that was interesting about that fight, number one, Samaki Walker, you know, stop the bus, Phil, stop the bus. And Phil Jackson has the bus stop. So they're in the middle of Cleveland, and Phil Jackson is going to allow Samaki Walker to challenge Kobe Bryant to get off the bus and get in a fight with a 6'9" guy who probably would have beaten him down pretty good. Kobe Bryant refuses to get off the bus. And then later, Samaki Walker gets to his hotel room in Cleveland, and there's a message from Kobe Bryant sobbing apologetically. And, you know, later Samaki, he wasn't telling that story to mock Kobe Bryant. He was telling it to sort of explain that here's this guy who looked really confident, who was super confident on the court, but really had these struggles inside to sort of present this thing. Look, I'm tough guy Kobe, you want to mess with me? When in fact, it really was a lot of like doubt and insecurity that came with it.
Author Jeff Perlman joins us. His book, Three Ring Circus, delves into the Shaq and Kobe years. And here's why I think your works and your books are so important. As time goes on in sports, we tend to gloss over the difficulty in the middle of it, and we just kind of look back fondly, nostalgically. And the Shaq and Kobe years are now this kind of cute Batman and Robin. Yeah, they were at each other's throats at times, but they won three championships, and now they kind of kissed and have made up. Of course, Kobe's no longer with us, but before he passed away, they seem to have patched it up. Your work here really delves into the reality of the situation. And Olden Polonies has an unbelievable quote in this book. And he says, it never works when you have two alpha males, even when it does. It doesn't ever work even when it does. What did he mean by that?
Well, he meant they won three championships back-to-back-to-back together. So you can say on the court, they won. So it worked. And it's always funny when people say to me, why didn't it work better? Like, but why didn't they win more? And I'm always like, one back-to-back-to-back championships. It's pretty freaking good. But, you know, they just, Olden Polonies was witness to this fight they had. They actually got into a really epic kind of brawl playing pickup basketball during the strike lockout, where Kobe gets mad at Shaq for calling too many fouls in pickup. And Shaq basically smacks him across the face and threatens to have him traded to Vancouver, and they go back and forth. And it's one of those things. Like, here's what I always find interesting. Maybe you agree with me. I don't actually know. Like, you know the play, the famous Shaq-Kobe play, like the definitive Shaq-Kobe play is the alley-oop against, when he throws it against Portland and Shaq slams the ball and goes right. And it's the play. It's the vintage play of Shaq-Kobe. And people say, this tells you everything you need to know. The funny thing is, it really doesn't. The thing that makes that play so unique is it never really happened. Like, it's so rare that Kobe's driving down the lane and past the Shaq. I gave him the alley-oop. 99% of the time, he's shooting that ball. And then in the huddle, Shaq is saying, why the F didn't you pass me the ball? Oh, go after yourself. Why aren't you freaking getting open? Why me? Blah, blah, blah. Well, freaking rebound a little bit, and maybe you get the ball. Like, that's what really happened all the time. And it worked because he was so much more talented than everyone else. And they had these great role players, and they had this coach, this legendary coach. But it's not like they were made to play with each other. They were just uber talented, and it worked out.
Exactly right. What Olden Polonies there is saying is that we were so talented, we were so great, of course it succeeded, but internally it couldn't succeed forever because it was like a train going off the rails. And we look at Shaq today in those Turner Studios, and he's pitching all types of soft drinks and sneakers and insurance companies with cartoon generals, and we look at him as this kind of soft and loving, you know, happy-go-lucky big man. But in his prime, in that locker room, he was difficult. There were teammates that called him cruel, called him surly. I mean, former PR guy saying it was tough to work with him. What was the real Shaq when he was in his mid to late 20s in L.A.?
Actually, I would argue there were definitely, he had his moments. There's definitely no doubt he had his moments. On the flip side, you know, like a bunch of guys said, the best teammate I've ever played with, the best superstar you've ever played with. The thing about Shaq as a Laker that I found just fascinating, it's almost like with Kobe, he just wanted you to kind of love him and defer to him. Like, he desperately wanted to be Batman to Kobe's Robin, and he wanted this thing Well, I'm the big brother and you're the little brother. And the stories of his generosity, I wrote an essay for someone today. He might be the best teammate ever to the little guy. Like, we used to have a guard, I don't really remember him. His name is Mike Penberthy out of Masters College. He's now the shooting coach for the New Orleans Pelicans. And Mike told me, Mike shows up to his first game with the Lakers, and everyone else is wearing these, you know, super fancy suits. And he's wearing a jacket he bought the day before from Banana Republic. And Shaq goes up to him quietly and says, "Yo, Mike, do you want a suit?" And he's like, "Nah, I don't, man." And Shaq goes, come back tomorrow. He meets him tomorrow, and Shaq has his personal trailer there, and he gets Mike Penberthy six suits. Mark Madsen told the story, great stories about Mark Madsen comes out of Stanford, Mormon, recently went on a Mormon mission to Spain, very devout, very pious. And, you know, I wrote a book about the Lakers and A.C. Green showed up, and he was the world's most famous virgin, and the Lakers in the 80s made his life miserable and mocked him relentlessly. Mark Madsen shows up on flight. Zach starts asking the flight attendants, "Hey, any chance you're Mormon?" Mark Madsen shows up at the Staples Center one day, and a woman's standing there, and she's like, "So last night Shaq was in a restaurant I was in, and he was going around asking women if they were Mormon because they had someone he wants you to set up with." Like, he would fly in. He flew in. There was a player named Joe Christian out of Penn State. For his first game, he flew in Joe Christian's parents and flew him in first class. After Christian kept saying, "No, it's okay, it's okay." He offered to pay for the funerals of parents' teammates when they died. Like, yeah, he could be surly and he could be awkward. And with Shaq, I mean, with Kobe, there was definitely friction that he was also at fault for. But the generosity, I don't think there's ever been a more generous teammate on the flip side than Shaq. I really don't.
That's fascinating. Jeff Perlman joins us, the author of Three Ring Circus. One of my favorite parts of the book is the pre-Shaq and Kobe years, which just delve into the dysfunction of Magic Johnson's return and Magic trying to coach the Lakers, and the Cedric Ceballos, Nick Van Exel years, which is just amazing. And that includes Nick Van Exel, which I had always thought that might have happened, might not have happened, saying infamously when they were down 3-0 to the Utah Jazz, 1-2-3 Cancun, as they break the huddle. I didn't know if that was real. But you retell the story, and it seems like even Van Exel admits that he said it, but it was in joking. So that definitely happened, huh?
No, 100%. That's, in a way, that's my favorite period of the team. You got Cedric Ceballos, who nicknames himself Scheiss, short for franchise, because he's defranchised. You have a young Eddie Jones. You have Magic coming back, and it's just a disaster because he just doesn't fit in. And Van Exel. So Van Exel, the year before, had gone on vacation with a Laker teammate named Corey Blount, who used to play with in Cincinnati. And they went to Cancun the year before. So now they're about to lose to Utah, and it's in a practice, and they're down 3-0. I think they were down 3-0. 1-2-3, Cancun. And if you talk about a misreading of the room, there's your moment. Like, Shaq actually went up to Jerry West and told him what happened. And Jerry West said he will not play for this team next year. And Van Exel swears it was all in jest. Nick Van Exel is now an NBA assistant coach and a really good one. And he acknowledges kind of what a buffoon he could be at times. So it was a lesson learned there, but it definitely happened.
Imagine being down 3-0 in an NBA series and chanting in practice, 1-2-3, Cancun, before you go back out on the floor. It's amazing. You know, you detail all of these moments, these ups and downs, the undulations of the Shaq and Kobe dynamic. Ultimately, it breaks up after they lose to the Detroit Pistons in 04. Do you think if they beat the Pistons in 04, that there's a way to keep those guys together?
No, 0%. I mean, basically Jerry Buss really had to make a business decision. Kobe had made it clear, very clear to a lot of people, that he was going to the Clippers. And that was a belief. He's going to the Clippers. If we don't take desperate action here, he's going to play for the other LA team in our building, which would have been a disaster for the Lakers, obviously. After they lost to Detroit, in game five of that series, the Lakers held a little sort of shindig just to mark the end of the season at a hotel in Detroit that night. And I talked to a former player named Kareem Rush, really nice guy. And he said, Kobe walks up to Kareem Rush and says to him very bluntly, "I'm never playing with that MF-er again." And he was talking about Shaq. And then later, Jerry Buss, the owner of the Lakers, walks into this party and Shaq is there with his wife and Kobe is there. And Jerry Buss walks right past Shaq and talks only to Kobe. And Shaq said he kind of knew at that moment that his time was done. They were just, if you think about that season, it was the Malone Payton edition. And they had Kobe flying in and out of Eagle, Colorado. Shaq demanding a contract extension and being ignored. Phil Jackson not knowing what was going to happen to him. Kobe, one foot out the door, actually telling Mike Dunleavy, the Clippers coach at one point, get me out of here. Like, it just wasn't, it was done. It was, when people say, how many titles could they have won? I would say three. Like, what they got is what they got, and it wasn't going to go anymore.
The book is Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Lakers Dynasty. One anecdote that I had no idea about that you detailed in this was that once Phil Jackson leaves after that all kind of breaks up, Pat Riley reached out to the Lakers to try to get the job. Of course, he was the Showtime Lakers coach throughout the 80s. At that point, he is in Miami. Funny how things come around, because he eventually trades for Shaq when he's in Miami. But were you surprised to learn that Pat was trying to get back into the Lakers?
I was. I had heard sort of rumors out of them, although I knew it was real. And the funny thing is, it ended with the Shaq trade. You know, there were these sort of pinings to return to L.A., pinings to sort of, you know, work with that group. I do think O'Reilly, if it happened earlier, O'Reilly coaching Shaq and Kobe situation is a really interesting one and a really intriguing one, because they had tired of the triangle offense. It was definitely breaking down. But then as soon as the Miami trade was made, as soon as Shaq went to Miami, all talk of that was dead, and they ended up hiring Rudy Tomjanovich.
I did not realize how boring Del Harris was in meetings until I read your book.
It's so sad. He is the nicest man. And he gave me 6 hours of interview time in Dallas. I'm not kidding. I swear to God, he's one of the smartest basketball men ever. He's one of the nicest people ever. He was a really good coach. Players swear by him. But his sort of, you know, the end of him was he would talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And guys like Nick, it was the wrong generation of players, you know. It wasn't Sidney Moncrief and Jack Sikma anymore. It was Shaq and Kobe and Nick Van Exel. And they just sitting there and listening to these lectures just killed those guys. And he was a good coach. He had a good run in L.A., but it just, they needed a change. It was just too much.
If you want a book that you can just rip through this fall, this is it. I mean, it's 400 and some odd pages. I just devoured it. Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Lakers Dynasty. It is so good if you're a basketball fan. The author, Jeff Perlman, joining us on the show. Jeff, I am admiring once again a wonderful work that you did. Great job on this book, and thanks so much for carving out time for us, buddy.
My dad always says, just tell people it's not about politics, and they'll probably buy it.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.